One of the interesting, I guess if you want to call it arguments, about this text deals with Christology. Don't let this word scare you. Christology. Ology is the study of Christ. One big issue surfaced. There's been a lot of ink spilt on it. Theologians are really all over the board on it, but I think it's important to at least grasp what this text means in the way of theology. And yes, every sermon should have some type of theology in it. This is the big question that theologians have tried to wrestle with and tried to understand. Ultimately, I think it's like trying to nail jelly to a wall. However, we're going to try to make some sense of it. Here's the big question. In the light of the temptation of Christ, the big question is, could Jesus sin? It's a major question. So scholars are divided on this. When you come to the temptation of Christ, and what we'll find out at the end is that Jesus was tempted in every way as we are. So the question is, could Jesus sin? Let me give you a short answer, and you can send your emails to me if you don't like this answer. First of all, it would have been impossible for Jesus to sin in his divinity. Because if Jesus could have sinned in his divinity, Jesus ceases to become Jesus, God ceases to become God, and therefore the whole thing unravels. However, it was very possible for Jesus to sin in the flesh, because he was in very much way, or every way, born like we were. Jesus had lungs, he had a vocal cord, he had arms. Here's the kicker. How does divinity pour into humanity and yet those be separate? If you know the answer to that, you will win big prizes, because no theologian can ever get to that. And to say that, I don't particularly think that any theologian can nail this down, but I think simply to say, in his divinity, impossible for Jesus to sin. In his humanity, possible. Or, if it wasn't possible, then why the temptation? There's a few if conditional clauses or first class conditional clauses in this text that we'll talk about in just a minute. All right, that's the big issue. Therefore, I see it as impossible for Jesus to sin in his divinity, very possible in his humanity. So now let's go to the text. First of all, Matthew tells us that Jesus was severely tempted and starts with the setting. Notice that Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. The wilderness is not a very good place. Matter of fact, if you were to go out here and you look at this particular area in Israel and in the wilderness, you would think to yourself, there's not a lot out there. And that'd be about right. There's not a lot out there. So it's not a real good place. And you have to realize that this came on the heels of Jesus' baptism, when John baptized him and he came up out of the water and he said, "This is my son in whom I am well pleased. Now you're going to hit the wilderness." A lot of us spiritually go through wilderness. Most times, whenever there has been a spiritual victory in our lives, it is immediately followed by a wilderness experience. Oftentimes I've been asked, "Wasn't that a great service?" And I go, "Oh, no." "Isn't this great that's happening?" "Yes, because I know one that's going to be irritated that that all happened." Satan. Now, you notice Jesus is led by the Spirit into the wilderness. This reminds me of the Israelites' wanderings. Jesus here wandered for 40 days and 40 nights. The Israelites, when they chose not to do what God wanted them to do, they wandered 40 years in the wilderness. I think there is a connection. Matter of fact, there's a connection with the temptation of Adam and Eve in the garden with the temptation of Christ. So here you have an issue where the Spirit leads the Son of God, who has just been proclaimed the Son of God by God himself, and now Jesus is forced out into the wilderness. Notice Jesus is following the Spirit. Now the ultimate question is, what's the purpose of this? Why after having such a grand moment, when Jesus was coming up out of the water and his God said, this is my son in whom I am well pleased. Why not start his ministry right there? Well, that's because in order to start the ministry, Jesus has to stranglehold Satan. He has to show dominance immediately. He probably didn't have to, but that's the way God did it. Now notice he says, and Jesus was led into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. The Greek word there, tempted, means to test or to try with the idea of enticing Jesus to sin. And by the way, there's a shift here. You'll notice it says, not a shift yet, but it is coming. But notice he says to be tempted by the devil. Do you know what the word translated for devil means there? Accuser. That's interesting. Because every time we fall to a temptation, Satan stands before God and accuses us. And Jesus says, remember, I died for that sin and paid for it on the cross. So here you have the devil tempting. And let me just say this up front. Let me just say this up front. And it's going to sound funny. Maybe not ha-ha funny. But you know what? This was really stupid on Satan's part. When I go back and I look at this temptation, long time ago I used to think, boy, this was a tough temptation. But then I look at what Satan really said, and I get worked up on that third point, so just get ready. But here you have Satan challenging the Son of God. Now, if you were an odds maker, you would say Jesus wins 100 times out of 100, and you'd right. Now notice, now this word entice, Satan, he's led out there by the Spirit to be tempted or enticed. Boy, that looks good, doesn't it? And you know this stuff's really good for you, right? It's dairy products. I don't know about this other stuff. But boy, when you get, you know what I'm talking about, midnight, you really shouldn't do it. You open the freezer, that'd be in the freezer. You'd have to be looking for that at midnight to get it. With chocolate syrup. Satan was tempting, enticing. Come on, Son of God, I want you to fail. It's crazy. Let me just say this. Satan is still attacking us in the wilderness experiences, enticing us to do what God doesn't want us to do, if you want to put it that way. Okay. Jesus was severely tempted in every way we are, and he starts out with the lust of the flesh. Now notice this. After fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. Hungry. Guess what? Jesus had a stomach. He was physical. In other words, if Jesus didn't eat, he became hungry. He was out there 40 days. That sounds like the 40 that we just heard of in the Israelites' wanderings in the desert. And matter of fact, that whole generation died off. They never saw the promised land because of their inability. Now, inability to do what God told them to do. But Jesus now will be victorious. And I think that's part of reversing the fall of Adam, is to have this wilderness testing. And the first thing that Satan tries to throw at him is the lust of the flesh. Now, I love to eat. Matter of fact, we were at Audrey's class reunion last night, 30 years. And we got there about 6:30, and they're supposed to start serving. I thought they were going to start serving food at 6:30. Of course, Dennis was with us. You know our farmer friend Dennis. He was with us. About 7 o'clock, I said, Dennis, I'm starving. And they had chicken. And Dennis and I got two platefuls. Fasting is probably not my good thing, I can tell you that, because I like food too much. But there were in Israel, you could have a full fast, which would mean you abstain from water and food, or you could have a partial fast in which you would abstain just from food. But at 7 o'clock at night, after that day was considered over, then you could actually eat food. So it wasn't, in a sense, a complete skipping of meals. You have to understand something here. Jesus skipped meals for 40 days. I don't think he skipped water, because it just says that he was hungry. So I think in some sense Jesus did have water. I'm not even sure you can live physically without water more than 3 days. And he was out there 40 days. So what was the purpose of fasting for Jesus? As he's led into the wilderness, he's fasting. It's really to get closer to God. That's what fasting is. It's to get closer to God. And if, you know, there's moments in your life when you're in the wilderness and you want to be alone with God, I would try just skipping a noon meal. I mean, I think fasting is biblical, and I think we've kind of lost this idea of fasting in the Western culture, in our culture. But Jesus said he did it for 40 days and 40 nights, and he was hungry. Now, you'll notice something here. I think there's a spiritual connection to this, but let's look. Now, notice the name shift. No longer the devil, he is called the tempter. Look at verse 3. And the tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." Two thoughts here. First of all, Satan did not tempt Jesus at the beginning of the fast. He tempted Jesus when he was at the weakest point of his physical body. In other words, he waited till a point where he knew 40 days would be over. Jesus would be tired. He would be probably hungry and exhausted. And that's when Satan came to him. And guess what? Spiritually, Satan waits until you're at the lowest point spiritually, and then he begins the attack. I do believe there's a spiritual connection here. But notice he says, if you are the Son of God. That word "if" is a big word in this text. You may not think so, but it is. That's a first-class conditional statement. And what it means is this. Satan knew full well who Jesus was. He's trying to draw. Jesus was there at the beginning, before the foundations of the world. Satan knew who he was. So when Satan rebelled, he says, if you are the Son of God, he knew he was the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. Three thoughts. Notice the name change. Devil to tempter. That talks about his function. That means his function in life is to go around tempting believers to do what is not of God. And the temptation was to focus on the flesh rather than on God. It was to focus on the physical needs rather than the spiritual needs. Hence, Jesus says this. It is written in verse 4, it is written that man shall not live by bread alone. It doesn't say that we shouldn't live by bread, but not bread alone. We have to eat. And I feel sorry for people that struggle with issues of eating and have trouble in those areas. But by every word that comes out of the mouth of God, in other words, Jesus said the spiritual food is much more important than the physical food. That's what the important thing is. He goes on now, and he talks about the pride of life in verses 5 through 7. Now notice this. Look at verse 5. Then the devil took him. No longer is the Spirit leading the Son of God. Now you see this change. Now the devil took Jesus. Jesus is in full view of Satan, and the Spirit of God is not there at this point. Now notice what he says, and the devil took him to the holy city. Where is that? That's Jerusalem. And he set him on the pinnacle of the temple. Actually, the Greek word for pinnacle means flat roof. If you want to look at it this way, it's Solomon's temple. He would have probably been right in maybe in this area near the door entrance, overlooking the Kidron Valley. You remember the Kidron Valley from Psalm 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Possibly Satan brought Jesus up to the pinnacle of a temple, which was actually 185 feet high. When I was in air assault school, we practiced rappelling off a temple, off the top of the platform. And that was 35 feet high. Now, have you ever seen 35 feet looking down? The first time you see it, you go, whoa, it's a long way. Well, we would triple or double or quadruple that. We'd jump from 120 feet. They're just trying to get us broken in. But I can tell you this, standing on the edge of that, looking 35 feet down, you're thinking, I hope this rope doesn't break. He took him. Notice, Satan's going right into the temple. And he tempts Jesus. And this is what he said. And he said to him, verse 6, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and their hands will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. Guess what, folks? Satan knows Scripture. However, Satan misquotes Psalm 91. Because this is not, Psalm 91 is not a messianic psalm. It is a great psalm for Christians. It's God's protection of his own people, not the protection of Jesus Christ. So Satan misquotes it to Jesus. You think how stupid that is? Do you think Jesus Christ goes, oh, wait a minute, he's right, that applies to me? What really cracks me up is the last one, and I'll get to it in just a minute. Now, notice what he says here. Jesus said to him again, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Satan wanted the Son of God to throw himself off the temple. Let me say this. And I think there's a spiritual point here. Do not try to manufacture situations in your life and then ask God to come along and try to help that. People go, I'm going to do this, that, or the other, and then God's going to act and come and help me. Maybe not. I'm going to do something totally foolish, and then I'm going to command God. Do you see what's happening here? It is commanding God to act on our stupidity. I've seen people try to manufacture stuff and make things happen. Think, you know, looking at a window, okay, if you're really God, make that window go up. That's pretty dumb. Particularly when all you got to do in the flesh is walk over and just open the window. Satan's trying to get Jesus to manufacture a situation where God will be forced to respond. The problem is the text that Satan used was mistaken. Jesus knew that. He said, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Now, the last one. This is the one I'm totally blown away by. And almost makes the temptation of Christ comical, in a sense. Not in a sense for us. Now notice he talks here in verse 8. He says, I love this. Listen to this. And he said to them, all of these things I will give you. I missed a verse. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the world and their glory. I want you to think about this. I honestly don't know if the text is saying it was a physical mountain where he took Jesus, or if it was a translated mountain. That is like where John was caught up into the third heaven and he was looking around. So here you have the Son of God up here. This is ridiculous. It's mind-boggling. And when I looked at it, I went, "What? Why would Satan do this?" Let me show you how ridiculous this is. And he said to him, all of these things I will give you if you fall down and worship me. Who is he talking to? He's talking to the Son of God, who was the one that formed all of this. He was the one that created the heavens, the stars, the universe, everything that was, everything that is, or everything that will be. It was created by Jesus Christ. How stupid was Satan to come with him and say, I'm going to give you what you already created. Colossians 1:16, for by him All things were created, both in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones, dominions, or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. We are talking about Jesus Christ, the Son. Here Satan comes and says, I'll give you what you've already created. That is the dumbest test. You think Jesus goes, okay. Oh, by the way, Satan, I was there before the foundations of the world. By the way, Satan, I was the one that all of this was created for. By the way, Satan, I'm the one where everything is going to come to, and I am the sovereign Lord of all creation. You can give me nothing. And it is kind of ridiculous sometimes in our own lives with what Satan tempts us with and what we give into. Jesus replies. You can see Jesus is irritated. Then Jesus said to him, that's cool. What does he say? Be gone, Satan. That is a sharp rebuke. Jesus was saying, that is the dumbest thing you've ever come up with. You're going to give me what I already own and created? It reminds me of an old country song. I'm going to get some emails from this, but if you buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free. Oceanfront property in Arizona. This is what the deal is. He tried to get Jesus to worship him. Notice he said. Notice this verse. I love it. This woman standing on the edge worshiping God. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. Tremble before him all the earth. Psalm 96:9. In other words, don't exchange the worship of this world and Satan for the worship of God. Jesus said, I will worship my Father. My Father and I are one. The Spirit is one. Jesus is God. God is God. The Holy Spirit is God. The three are intimately joined, connected. The way I explain that to children is the three dispensations of God is if you took water, ice cubes, and steam, you would all have the same substance with different function. And Jesus said, I will not worship you. And notice the devil's response. Then the devil left him. And behold, angels came and were ministering to him. Does anybody know of an Old Testament prophet where angels ministered to the person? Huh? Elijah. Elijah had gone without food for a while. And angels came and ministered to Elijah and gave him food. You know, I had a thought this week. Were these the same angels that ministered to Jesus? That'd be awesome. Because you know what? The word here refers to giving physical assistance. So you know what? Jesus had a takeout order from heaven. The angels brought him food and ministered to him. Got him back up on his feet. Let me say three things about temptation very, very quickly. These are some conclusions just to this section. I've got another section to go, so just hold on. First of all, temptations are oftentimes, we oftentimes respond based on human need. Tempted for bigger things, better things. Feeding the flesh, clothing the flesh. You've seen me, I've put clothes on there that were thousands and thousands of dollars. Please. I think scientists say our bodies are worth $1.98 total. And yet we spend millions of dollars putting clothes on our bodies. Feeding. Yes, it's important. But we do not gauge our spiritual life by the abundance of the flesh. There's also the temptation of misusing our gifts. Satan said, I want you to jump off that mountain and I want you to abuse the gift that you have, the gift of power. which actually, if Jesus would have done that, he would have said, look, I am the Son of God. Pride. Satan knows where we get prideful, doesn't he? None of us have ever had moments where we're just prideful outside of his will. Yes, we have. And also to misplace worship. I once heard somebody say, I can go to the beach and worship Christ on Sunday. I see a lot of churches on the beach, actually, when you think about it. You got to make worship a priority. Satan attacked him on the physical realm, the spiritual realm, and the realm of worship. Three major areas of the Christian life. You'll be hit there too. Let me just say this about church and worship and all that. It should be a priority. If you're single, should just get it in your head right now. This is what I'm going to do on Sunday morning regardless. If you have children, just make it a facet of your life. This is something that we don't negotiate. That we're just going to do it. And it definitely, if you hold your ground, it will pay off. Now the last. Because Jesus was severely tested, and he's tested in every way that we are, he can also help us. I love this verse. This is Hebrews 14. This is a great verse. Since we then have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. Please listen to this. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness. I think this is tied to Matthew. But one who has in every way been tempted as we are, yet was without sin. If you look at Jesus' qualifications, notice that our high priest, and by the way, Hebrews is comparing Jesus Christ to Moses. And Jesus Christ is much better than Moses. Jesus Christ is much better than the angels. Jesus Christ is much better than any sacrificial system. Jesus Christ is the high priest. By the way, none of those passed through heaven apart from Jesus Christ, but it says he did. He passed through the heavens. The Son of God reigns at the right hand of the Father. He is our great high priest, and that is his qualification. Nobody has done it better or ever will do it better than Jesus Christ. Oh, and by the way, this God that is so transcendent, Jesus Christ, so transcendent, Christ, Lord, guess what? He took on human flesh called Jesus. That's where he can identify with us. Jesus had lungs. I said this before. He had lungs. He had legs. His nails grew. He had hair. He had a vocal cord. He had a heart. Just like you. Just like me. But notice, he can sympathize with our weakness. Jesus knows. How can you be so high and yet know everything about me? That's the qualification. I think the big thing is our privilege. We've got the priest who can help us. The high priest who is higher than any other priest that's ever lived, Jesus Christ. Guess what? That's why he came. He came to redeem you and also to help you. Our privilege. I love this next picture. This is from Hebrews. I've kind of went over to Hebrews now. This is the next verse, Hebrews 4:16. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need. All of us have been like this woman right here. Need help. She's in the middle of nowhere. Sometimes you get in a spiritual nowhere in your life. You are out. You feel like you're totally disconnected from everybody. You are drifting on the waters of despair. You feel alone. You feel isolated. And at that moment is when this verse should become a reality in your heart. It says, let us with confidence, not with timid unsureness. It says, with confidence, draw near to the throne. I love this. Draw near to the throne of judgment. No. Draw near to the throne of grace. I'm saying, folks, you never outrun the grace of God once you are in the grace of God. So therefore, you do have confidence to draw near to God. Everybody in this room, you do not need this pastor to help you draw near to God. If you have the Holy Spirit living in you, you can go to God yourself. You can go to the throne by yourself. It is a throne of grace that we may receive mercy. The Greek word there, mercy, means that which we don't deserve. God doesn't need to help us. But he did. And do you know why he did? Because he loves you. But not only are you going to receive mercy, you're going to find grace, God's unmerited favor to help you make it through these hard times in this life. I think this text is tied to Matthew chapter 4 because it shows us that Jesus was tempted in every way that we are, but yet without sin. Therefore, if we go to God, he can help us overcome these temptations and gain victory in our own lives because he understands. And all we have to do is go to the throne of grace where we find grace. The Greek word there, charis, same word we've been talking about my ministry the last 3 years. Grace is God's unmerited, undeserved, unfading love he has for your favor. You need help? Some of you probably are spiritually drifting. Maybe it's a situation that's come up in your life, but you need help. I can pray with you. The deacons of this church can pray with you. But let me direct you to the throne of grace first. Yes, we can certainly pray and help. But when your spiritual life is at an all-time low, temptations begin to flow. You go to him. Go to the grace that God may shower you abundantly. Maybe you're not even in the Christian race. You're somewhere else. You can come to Christ. Overcoming temptation, and I want to conclude this by saying, did you notice when Jesus was tempted, every time Jesus quoted Scripture? Overcoming temptation means that we have to get in the Word, and sometimes we have to get angry at Satan and say, "Be gone." And while we're doing that, draw near to God so that he can help us have the ability to live the Christian life the way he wants us to live it. You know, when I get tempted and I fail, I think, what an idiot. What a dummy. I should have known. Shouldn't have done that. Well, you got to learn from Christ. Satan, he wants you. He can't take your salvation, but he wants to hurt your relationship. Maybe it's time to come home.